Good morning.
Good morning.
My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic.
Good morning.
Glad to be here with you this morning. Sober. My topic this morning is a subject that's very near and dear to me, and I think a very, very essential tool. I don't even like that word tool, but I think it's a very, very essential part of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have never been able to place any one particular thing to sobriety. I think it's a combination of things, and if I may, I'd like to quote one of my ex-wives, and she says very simply that, well, you can give her a little credit, Linda. I didn't make too many comments where you're speaking. Just be quiet down there. You're the one who told me to shut up and listen, not me. But she said very true. She said the three things in her life that makes her solid and comfortable in Alcoholics Anonymous. One is a sobriety date, and I have one. I came out of the penitentiary on the fourth day of June, 1961, which my sponsor says is my sobriety date. And I accept that. The other one is a sponsor, and I have one. It's been my sponsor for the last 13 years, and that's the second thing. And the other one is a home group. And when all those three things are in place, I'm in pretty good shape. She also says if you don't have a sobriety date, it would be helpful to have one, because Alcoholics Anonymous works a lot better if you're sober. And I believe that too. And I have always had a home group. And when I came out of the penitentiary, my home group was the Thursday night institutional meeting in the old YMCA in downtown Long Beach. And it was a very large, very active, very dynamic meeting. Maybe there was 60, 70 people in that meeting every Thursday night, which was, in those days, was a large, active, participating meeting. And it slowly but surely went by the wayside, because unbeknownst to me, it was a participation meeting, and we started doing things like giving cakes to Al-Anons for staying off a chocolate cake for a year and stuff like that. And it slowly deteriorated. And it had nothing to do with the Al-Anons. It means they got out of their primary purpose. They went on about their business. I don't know, I was 6 or 7 or 8 years sober about that particular time, and I was sponsoring people, and we were going up to the Pacific Group on Tuesday nights, and we met in the old clubhouse on Ohio Street, and we did that because we got a charge once a week. We went into where Alcoholics Anonymous was being spoken, and all you heard about was Alcoholics Anonymous, you had, you know, a lot of people participating, and there was enthusiasm and strong sponsorship, and I was gathering a little band of misfits around me, and we seemed to just travel in little packs on Tuesday night. And so they said to me one night, they said, you know what, we're going to have to get something started like this down here in Long Beach. And so I started casing the joints, you know what I mean? I go around to different meetings, and one of my people that I sponsored, I got him elected secretary of the Lakewood Speakers Meeting. And I thought, yeah, man, this is it. I'm going to move in there and slide in there and stick this format in there, and these people won't know what hit them. And then I went over there one night and sat down in the Lakewood Speakers Meeting, and I saw them sitting at those long row of tables. And I thought, boy, what an order, I can't go through with it. You take those tables out from the people where they couldn't sleep and eat during the meeting, and you'll all have to shoot half of them or something, or they'll go somewhere else. And I've always been opposed to tables in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And I don't know why, but it seems like to me that there's less interest going on in a meeting when there's people hanging around tables. It's almost like some type of a therapeutic situation. And I've always found it's easier to just put your head down on the table and go to sleep than it is to fall out of your chair. It's just, I don't know why that was, but I took a look at that, and that kind of turned me off. And I wandered around a couple of other places, and still going back and forth. And so one day, maybe a little over almost 25 years ago now, Clancy and I were in Hot Springs, Arkansas at a thing, and we were having breakfast on this Sunday morning, and I I looked at him and I tell him, you know, I'm looking around down there in Long Beach, because really Long Beach was a series of Alano clubs, and we don't do it that way. And it just almost, oh God, it was just terrible is what it really was. It was just, not there wasn't people staying sober, because there were all kinds of people staying sober, but there was no life there. I mean, you went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you come out there trying to figure out whether you're supposed to stay sober and live, or just lay down and die, for Christ's sakes. You know, I mean, they didn't have much going for them, in my way of thinking, because there was not that generation and energy and excitement that I had when I went up to this Tuesday night meeting in Pacific Group. And although, and so I looked around and saying, I was telling Clancy this, and I said, I thought a couple times about having these guys that I sponsor who were active in this area that I was in, and they were secretaries and making coffee and doing stuff. And he said, why don't you start a meeting? And he said, that's what I did when I was sober. And he said, I didn't have anything that quite turned me on. He said, so I started this meeting. And I said, okay. So I went down, he gave me the format, Pacific Group, and I talked it over with one of my lieutenants. And I moved him up from sergeant to lieutenant, because he was really doing well. He was the secretary of this meeting we were going to take over. And besides, he had some influence in this little town that we lived in. And I talked to him. I said, you know, man, I'm thinking real seriously about starting a meeting, you know, a copy of the format of the Pacific Group up here. And I said, what do you think about that? He said, that sounds like a good idea, Johnny. I'll look around and see what we can do. And so I said, okay. And so he said, I called him up on Sunday, and he said, hey, I rented us a hall. It's the Bellflower Women's Club over here. And I said, well, good, man. Maybe we week from Monday we'll start us a meeting. He says, no. We'll start it tomorrow night, because I've already paid the rent. And so I went into this group, and we started this group. There were 17 people there. And we had a format, basically, of the fifth chapter, and two 10-minute speakers, a coffee break, and a main speaker, and the traditions, and the whole enchilada. And we had 17 people at that meeting. And I was the secretary of the meeting. I was the first secretary, but I was also the coffee maker. I was also the setup man. I was also the guy that swept the floor. I was also the guy that got the speakers. I was also the guy that did everything, except now my baby wanted to horn in on my activity. He wanted to be the coffee maker, so I slowly but surely relinquished that job, because that was good. He made better coffee than I did anyhow. And little by little, because the meeting was started with the idea that we don't give a damn how big this meeting gets, as long as it generates what we want it to generate, sponsorship and some type of energetic enthusiasm. That's not making noise, that's just a feeling that you can feel in an energetic meeting. And so what we did, we started this meeting, we had 17 people, and it slowly started to grow, and it slowly started to grow, and then they had an election, and they cast me out of office, and I sat around and sulked for 6 or 7 months, because I couldn't do anything but sweep the floors now. They relegated me. That's what you get, you know. When you're an old timer in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's kind of funny. You know, when you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous and you're in there doing the dishes and sweeping the floors, they say, look at that newcomer, man. They're really trying to get it together. They're really into action. When you get to be 30, 35 years sober and you're in there doing stuff like that, you know what they say? Look at that old son of a bitch. They're still trying to run everything around here. It's the most amazing thing that I know of. These people grow, and now it finally grows. We'll be having our 25th anniversary come August. 25, that's a long time, 25 years. And now we have 300 people there every Monday night. No matter, little fractions come and go, and little people run it, trying to do this and change the format. It just stays the same, and it stays the same, because basically, we set a little rule when we first started getting sober, when we first started that meeting, that our secretary would have 5 years sobriety. We'd set a sobriety date on the secretary, at least 5 years. I was the only one who had 5 years sobriety, and besides my wife. And so she was the next secretary for a couple of years. And then people started being 5 years sober, and they started electing them, and elect them, and elect them. And every year we do we're probably only the second meeting that does this thing. Every year, the last meeting of the year, the term of the secretary of our group, we have what we call a secretary's meeting, all the ex-secretaries of that group come there and participate. And what's really, really exciting to me is that all those ex-secretaries are still sober. All of them. I mean, 25 years, you're talking about 25 years, you're talking about 17, 18 people, because there's been a couple of people who've had a couple of terms in there, secretaries, and a couple of years, but they're all still sober. Some of them live in Florida, some of them live in New Mexico, but basically they all show up at that secretary's meeting once a year. And it's really an amazing thing to see stuff like that, and there's still the same energy and enthusiasm and excitement there every Monday night. You can just walk in that room. And I have made a thing to myself, and we were talking about it out here a while ago, is that I have two home groups. I have this meeting that I started with the help of some other people, which is the Monday night Bellflower Big Book group, which is just a kind of a mini version of the Pacific group, if you really want to know the truth. And then when Clancy became my sponsor 13 years ago, one of his directions to me was to attend the Pacific group on Wednesday night, which I do on a regular basis. And I have a coffee commitment job there. I make coffee for 1,100 people every Wednesday night. And then I wander around and see who's drinking two cups of coffee, find out what's going on there. I just find out who's the real freeloaders in that meeting. I'm doing the work and nobody else is getting the credit for it. But I have learned a great many things sitting in a home group. Number one is that it's some place where I go every week. Rain or shine, feel good, feel bad, sick or well, I go and sit in my chair. I sit essentially in the same seat every Monday night that I've sat in for 25 years. And you'd be surprised at the number of people, new in Alcoholics Anonymous, who have come up to me for a period of time, who have got to our podium and shared from time to time, and say, there's one thing I always know. Every Monday night when I come here, I look down and there he sits. I know that there's something going on here. Now, you hear many things in Alcoholics Anonymous about 12-step work. I mean, it's almost a foreign lost art that goes on. But there's many phrases of 12-step work in Alcoholics Anonymous. Just being somewhere on a continuing basis sometimes serves a purpose or a recognition for somebody else. It's just automatically this way. And I see these things going on all the time, but also it has enabled me another thing. It's enabled me to be of service. I have come to understand that my commitment to that group is not the job that I do there. I have a job in a Monday night meeting. I'm the assistant chairman. That means I get to help the chairman put the chairs away every Monday night. And it's really kind of an amazing thing to me. You know, I just sit there and the guy I sponsor, 21 years sober, is the chairman. He says to me every Monday night, damn it, you're not doing it right. And I let him have his moment in the sun for about 15 minutes because we're not going to put those chairs away forever, you know. And then we close the door and he's back to being what he was before. But that's the way it works. But sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, my commitment is to be at the meeting. To be at the meeting is the commitment. To be at my home group, good or bad. Because I hear people all the time say, oh, I go to 5 or 6, 7 meetings a week. That's just wonderful. You can hide in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, going to 5 or 6 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous a week, if you don't hit the same one all the time. But it's kind of hard for me to sit down in my seat on Wednesday night, right next to my sponsor, next to a man who's 30 years sober that I love a great deal. I sit in that seat, it's kind of hard for me to sit there and try to put on some type of a false face when I don't feel good. When I'm in some type of a bad mood, when I've had one of them cloudy days that alcoholics like me seem to have from time to time, when my head has seemingly taken me out to lunch, it's kind of hard for me to sit there and somebody say, how you doing? Say, oh, I'm just wonderful, thank you. Because these people have seen me when I have sat in that meeting when everything was well. It's kind of hard for me to wander around in that meeting and shake hands with all my many friends that I have gained in that meeting and say to them that I feel good when last week they saw me feeling good and this time they won't see, because people will say to me, what the hell's the matter with you? Don't you feel well? Are you tired? What's the matter? And, you know, you just invariably have to say, oh, I don't know, maybe having a crappy day or something. You know, maybe I got my head up my kazoo over there the other day, or maybe I'm in some type of a jackpot that my ego had gotten me into. Maybe, you know, which I guess is the standard procedure to say, I guess my relationships aren't going real well today. You know, just, and then when you say that, Clancy, he just digs it off somewhere and goes, excuse me, I got to go to the bathroom. And I have learned a lot of things. One of the things I've learned, I've installed a new telephone system in my house. And when it, you know, it's one of those answering things. And when you ring the phone, the message comes on and says, hi, this is Johnny, and if you want to talk about sobriety, press 1. If you want to talk about sponsorship, press 2. If you want to talk about a home group, press 3. If you want to talk about relationships, hang up. And it seemed to work real well, because they don't really have much to say. But I learned, I guess, basically what I know more about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is something that I learned from my papa in Alcoholics Anonymous, an old man by the name of Chuck. Because I used to ask a lot of questions when I was new. Because I didn't know a lot of things, and I knew I didn't know a lot of things, and I had no idea about what life was all about, and I was under some type of a hypnotic trance that everybody comes into Alcoholics Anonymous and works these 12 golden steps and wanders off into the tulip somewhere and you know, just live happy, happy, happy ever after. And I was coming out of that penitentiary, I was thrown smack dab into reality, and I saw that everybody doesn't do that. You know, that people come to Alcoholics Anonymous in all various shapes and sizes and forms, and they do things. And I would ask Chuck about it, and he said things like, well, son, he said, what you do is you just sit around in these meetings with your eyes open and watch what goes on here. And he says, and if you have any doubt about what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous, all you have to do is sit in a meeting with your eyes open and watch your friends go out and prove to you everything that you're thinking about, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. Now, if I'm just taking AA meetings piecemeal, you know what I mean? If I'm just jumping over here this week and jumping over here this week and jumping over here next week and jumping over there next week and jumping over here next week, I am never going to be able to watch a group of people behave in all various ways. And I'm never going to get some kind of an idea on what these people have that I want. I mean, because all I'm going to do is just catch whatever looks good over here, or whatever looks good over there, or whatever looks good over there, or whatever looks good over there. If I sit smack dab in the middle of reality, which I do 2 times a week on Monday and Wednesday nights, and I sit there with my eyes open and my mouth shut, which is totally, and sit still and watch what goes on around me, I get to watch the great parade of Alcoholics Anonymous and the great lessons that are learned here by observing what the people do. I watch people come here and get happy, stay here and stay happy, and I have watched people come and I have watched people go. I have watched people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, jump in, be active, man, do everything, make the coffee, be secretary, be readers, be speakers, do everything, and I watch them just slowly just fade off into the sunset. I have a great experience by watching people come to Alcoholics Anonymous in their first year, and wandering around in my home groups and seeing people say things to me like, I know one guy in particular, I think about him all the time because I love making coffee. It was my first real job in Alcoholics Anonymous, my coffee maker, and I still have one today. But this guy was a coffee maker. We gave him the job of coffee maker in a Monday night meeting, and he made coffee in his first year. And after he had his 1 year birthday, I didn't see him for a couple weeks. And he came back the meeting, I don't know what for, and I said to him, I said, hey, I haven't seen you for a couple of weeks. Where you been, man? Are you going to make coffee no more? He said, hey, wait a minute. I don't have to do that crap anymore. I've served my apprenticeship. I'm a year sober. And I don't have to do this anymore. I don't have to make that coffee and listen to your nonsense and do all this kind of stuff. I shook his hand and said, God, good luck to you, pal. And I watched him go out and get drunk and die in a fire. He set himself on fire and burnt to death. And that had nothing to do with anything other than the fact of what seems to be the theme of this entire week that I have heard, is that if you quit doing this stuff and you're alcoholic, dreadful things will happen to you. And nowhere in the world is that more apparent to people like me than to sit in my meetings every week and watch the people around me. I'm not judging them. I'm just watching. I'm watching the parade. I'm watching the show. I'm watching what goes on here. My eyes are open. I'm seeing people. I'm seeing people come to me and get sober and stay sober and seemingly say, yeah, I've got it now, man, my case. And they're gone. I sit in that meeting every Monday night, and last month, a guy I sponsored who got sober in that meeting, 21 years sober, been to that meeting every Monday night for 21 years, stood at a podium, took his one-year cake and looked down and saw four people, all sitting close together who were there at his first meeting. And he kept coming back to that meeting for a long time because he had a resentment at me. Because he came up to me when he was new and said he wanted to do something, and I gave him my mop. That wasn't what he had in mind. So he mopped and mopped and mopped. And a year later, I saw some guy asking for the mop, and I thought he was going to hit him. It was his mop, for Christ's sake. He wasn't going to give it up. I mean, we are like that, you know. But where do you see that? I mean, you don't see that in hit or miss. I mean, you don't see it. It's the most amazing thing that I know of. These two home groups of mine are the most amazing groups of Alcoholics Anonymous I've ever seen. They're the only places in the world I know that the front of the meeting fills up first. It's the most amazing thing that I know of. I mean, I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm starting this meeting, and you're like some kind of a little guru running around. No, you got two or three carloads of goofs that are following you around who think you know something, so you got to pretend you are better than you are. And so I'm going off to speak somewhere, and these kids were saying, man, we're going to get to the meeting early, man. The only thing they've ever been to was a Monday night meeting. I said, what for? I said, we're going to stay in the front row. And I said, no, don't worry. You know, we're going over here to the Alano Club, for Christ's sakes. He said, what do you mean? I said, we could walk in here 5 minutes after the meeting starts, and the first three rows are empty. Oh, no. They'd never seen it. So they'd walk in there and they'd say, run down there and sit down in front. It's amazing. And we ran like packs, like little packs sticking together that say their strength. But where do you get that? You get that from a family type thing. See, I'm one of them very fortunate people that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no family. I had nothing. Nobody or nothing. My mother was drunk and she stayed drunk, and my brother wouldn't talk to me. And so I gathered up these people. I got a father in Alcoholics Anonymous, a mother in Alcoholics Anonymous, brothers and sisters in Alcoholics Anonymous. My family's there. So I really have a basic family reunion two times a week. But what a great, great exercise and observation in human nature than to sit someplace once or twice a week and observe what goes on around you. It's the most amazing thing that I know of. People do all sorts of things here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you watch them. I see things that I don't even believe in Alcoholics Anonymous. I see people who were married once upon a time, no longer married, still friends, in meetings, visiting and talking and sharing with one another in these meetings. It's the most amazing thing that I know. I do that. I have an ex-wife that I'm very, very, very close to. Not that close, but close. She's a nice lady, a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I respect her for that, and she respects me for Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the most amazing thing that I know of. And I'm secure there. I spend most of my time, I get to the Wednesday night meeting at 4:30 every Wednesday afternoon, and I make coffee. And I love it. And people stand around watching me make coffee. I turn around and watch them, and you know, here they are. They're watching the old fool stand on the chair trying to pour coffee water through that thing. And they can't hardly wait. And he says, can I have a cup of coffee? I said, geez, if I knew you were going to be this early, I'd have started making it at 2 o'clock, for Christ's sake, just to accommodate you from things. I still have a sarcastic, bitter tongue sometimes, but what has happened is that the people with early commitments have slowly but surely filled up that kitchen earlier than their earlier commitments. And we have a little meeting before the meeting. And it's like a little fellowship of things. The people that I love and people come in, people drive in, and maybe they have line commitments, or they have table or chair commitments, or they have parking lot attendants. And they come in and they have a cup of coffee, and we sit there and visit. We talk about various things in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they go on about their business. And then the group comes floating in, and I sit out there in the chair and watch them. I watch them coming in with their commitments. I think we're the only two groups in the world that we have people actually line up and fight over commitments. They have jobs. The Monday night meeting, we elect our secretary, and our secretary appoints all the jobs, all of them. Do you want a job? You ask the secretary. The secretary does everything, or they're the head, and everybody does everything but the secretary. That's the way it really works. But yes, and we elect our secretary at the business meeting before the meeting, which is an open meeting. Anybody can come, anybody can be nominated, and we run it by secret ballot. And the reason we found that out to be is this. When we used to, one time there was a guy I sponsored, he wanted to be secretary of that Monday night meeting very badly. And so we had an election, and that, in those days we elected people by hand votes. And he didn't get elected. He got beat out by two or three votes, and he was so mad at everybody that voted against him that he wouldn't come back to the meeting. He died sober, but he died with a hell of a resentment, I'll tell you that. And so from that time on, we decided we were going to have a secret ballot. And so we started doing it the way we're supposed to do it. We'd write secret ballots, and we'd have a runoff between the two top people. And doing that takes out all the resentments of what goes on in the meeting. It's the greatest thing I know. Then the secretary is elected at our meeting, Monday night meeting. In Pacific Group, we elect it after the meeting. We have a big open meeting, and people are nominated. Matter of fact, we're going to have elections next week. But the secretary of that meeting is announced, our new secretary, at the opening of the meeting, and at the coffee break, there is a line. Nobody's getting coffee, nobody's getting smoked. People are lined up in front of that podium. There must be 50, 60 people lined up at the podium asking for jobs. And yet I go to some meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous where they have to stand there and beg people to pick up their damn chairs, to do anything. They have to almost beg them. And I'm so glad that I'm attached and have home groups where people love this thing so much and they've been taught so well that they will fight and struggle. We have over 500 people who have commitments at the Wednesday night meeting. 500 people. And then we have a waiting list for people to take jobs. Now that's saying something. On the Monday night meeting, we have 100 and some odd jobs. And we have people on a waiting list for those jobs. It's absolutely and totally amazing. Half of the people in the meeting have jobs. Half of the people in the meeting are providing some type of participation in their own sobriety there. They're not just wandering around. We have, you know, we have people, we have secretaries, old secretaries up lighting candles on cakes. We have old secretaries wandering around with baskets taking the contributions. We have old secretaries doing everything, writing things, doing stuff. They're all around the place, setting up meetings. It's absolutely and totally amazing. And you go to some of these groups, somewhere around there, you never see any of the ex-secretaries because they've done their job and split. Or they sit back and want to offer advice. We don't do that in the meetings I go to. We don't take any kind of an idea that just because we've been sober for a period of time, that we don't have to do anything anymore. I'm one of those people who believe that the old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous sometimes are shoved off into the corner, but they let themselves be shoved off into the corner. They let themselves be shoved off into the corner in some of these meetings by their own little sickness. It's not that way anymore. And so they leave and they turn the meeting over to a bunch of goofs who don't know anything, and they destroy it. And they can't understand. They sit back in their pompous crap and they say to themselves, well, Alcoholics Anonymous is going to hell in a handbasket. If you think that, if you think Alcoholics Anonymous is going to hell in a handbasket, you ought to come and go to meetings with me.
This is the end of side one. Stop the tape now, turn it over, and begin listening to side two without rewinding.